Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Herefordshire Light Infantry's podcast, Just a Walk in the Sun. And for this edition, we have a guest visiting us who's got a long association with not just Herefordshire and Hereford, but also the armed forces of Herefordshire, the Herefordshire Light Infantry, the cadets going through to the light infantry and the rifles. So we're very pleased to welcome Mr. Bill Jackson with us. So good afternoon, Bill, and welcome to the museum. Not that you're a stranger to the museum at all.
Thank you, Colonel Andy. No, I first came to this building in 1956, and I can always remember it because I had just left Lupton School as a colour sergeant, and Colonel Tom Hill had talked me into becoming an officer cadet.
I think Colonel Tom was very good at talking people into doing things, wasn't he?
Yes, he certainly was. And John Allman also from Lupton came at the same time.
But your history goes back before then as well. I understand you were born in Hereford. So perhaps you could tell us a little bit about your early life and perhaps how you managed to become a colour sergeant, the dizzy height of colour sergeant with the cadets at Lupton School.
Well, I was born in the city, christened in All Saints. My mother's side of the family were Baileys of butchers, and I, at the age of 11, was told by my grandmother that I wouldn't be a butcher. She just sold the freehold premises in Irongate to Woolworths. I'd failed my 11 plus and the cathedral school, and she said she would pay for my school fees at Lupton.
Oh, right. Well, so you've now got to Lupton, and I'm just trying to imagine what sort of scholar you were, Bill.
I enjoyed sport, cricket and rugby. I wasn't scholastic, and that's why Lupton was such a good school. Mm. And, of course, they had the CCF, the Cadet Force, which we went into at 11.
And that must have been a great escape from the academic world.
It certainly was. We even had our own armoury. In those days, we had the 303 Enfield Mark IV, I think it was.
It would have been, yep.
We had a shooting range up on Holland, which was the games field, 2-2. And, of course, we had the old uniforms of the Gaiters and the Brasses.
The good old itchy battle dress.
And the itchy battle dress and two pairs of boots, one the parade boots. We had Captain Pat Kelly, who taught us how to have a candle and a spoon and to smooth
the... To burn them down.
Burn them down. I can remember once when we went to Purbright by troop train.
Yes.
This was in about 1960 or 61. I went down there with a 303 Enfield over my shoulder.
Yeah, good old days, or perhaps not so good old days.
Well, they were in some respects, and the live ammunition was in the guards van.
Mm. So that would have been your annual camp. I mean, that must have been an interesting time, going to a regular barracks and being exposed to regular soldiers and regular army food, perhaps?
Well, the food was certainly after Lupton School. but the thing is, we actually were under canvas in bell tents.
Right.
With duck boards in between them, which meant if it rained, then your boots were dry and your tent kept dry. We had to dig the latrines, but the real sort of benefit, and of course we were controlled by the bugler, from early morning to last thing at night.
Brilliant! Yes.
And we had our mess tins, and we would get down to the canteen to get breakfast, and that was the best meal of the day for us.
Excellent. Egg, sausage, bacon, beans,
bacons,
all
every
the
bean.
Good stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, got to be done every now and again.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. And so how many of you were there in the CCF at Lupton?
About 90.
Oh, so a good number
parade,
then.
Yeah. You know, it was always my desire to become colour sergeant because you had this red sash and you had your stick, your cane there, and you were in charge of 92 people when the annual parade came.
Yeah, and so you joined at age 11, and then what age were you when you became a colour sergeant?
17.
17, right. So that would have been almost your last year at school.
Yeah, it was about the last year and a half.
And then from from there, Tom Hill managed to get hold of you, good old Colonel Tom.
We were wearing the Hereford Cat badge because we were under the Hereford Light Infantry Regiment. The PSIs came out from Hereford. Tom Hill came out and they were looking at recruiting. He asked John Allman and myself as to whether we would be interested in becoming officer cadets.
Mm.
That was the same time as Chris Barnes.
Yeah.
And his brother, who came in a year
later,
famous Robert.
Yeah, I think Chris is in Australia.
He's
now,
in
isn't
Australia.
He?
Yeah. Came back last year.
Right.
We were four officer cadets.
Ah.
We were green, although I'd done the CCF. I was made the acting platoon commander of D Company at Leominster.
Ah, right, yeah, because D Company's always been at Leominster. Presumably then, by that time, it was in the new drill hall, was it?
Yeah, 1956, same year as this building. It was built, and at the same time, the cadet building on the Ludlow Road was built.
I know, yeah, yeah.
So it was, and then that was, being looked after by Jack Greenhouse.
Oh, who was, he was the Sergeant Major of D Company in 1944 when the Herefords went to war at Normandy.
Yeah. Absolutely, and he was in charge also of the bar upstairs.
I can imagine that with Jack.
The Ranking Club.
Yes.
And that was before it went down to its new site on the Hereford Road. And it had a one-armed bandit. My job was right at the very beginning to do the accounts. And we also had a fund for the cadets.
Oh, right.
And that was the first time I ever got involved with the Herefordshire Army cadets.
Yeah. Well, that's now a few years ago. So what was Colonel Tom's selling point to you, the unique selling point for you to join the TA as it was then?
Well, it wasn't so much. I actually wanted to go in the army, but my father was against it. He said I would have gone into the infantry and come out as a captain at about 30 with no future. Mm. I disagreed, but, that was the way it was. And so he didn't really have to sell it.
Mm.
That was my choice. And I'd just taken articles with Russell Borden and Bright as a auctioneer and valuer. To Bill Gallimore, Charter Surveyor, and served under him for 3 years. But Geoffrey Bright was ex-Light Infantry KSLI in the war, so I had an ally, which allowed me the flexibility, I think, of holidays and taking time off.
Oh, that was quite handy then. And the money wasn't an attraction to you?
I got paid £13 a month for 3 years, and that was the biggest attraction. If I went to camp, and I did three camps, two at Sennybridge and one up at Otterburn, plus all the extras, I could earn around about £800 a year.
Yep.
Now, that was a lot of money in those days.
Yeah, so there was that was a bit of an attraction then.
I used to put my hand up and volunteer for anything.
Yeah. Now, the other chap that used to be over at Leominster was Bill Rawlings. Did you come across Bill?
I came across Bill. He actually was the company commander as I arrived there, and then Peter Coates took over.
Oh, yeah.
Captain Peter Coates, who was ex-para. His platoon was the first to go into Egypt in the Suez War.
Oh, in 56, yeah.
In 56, and landed on an airfield there.
Wow.
Peter was, how does one put it, his own boss.
Mm.
But he was one of the guys that you would follow.
Yeah.
If you went and had to do something, you would always be behind him.
And of course, the Herefordshire Light Infantry was a big organisation then, spread right the way across the county, and I think into the Forest of Dean as well at this stage.
Yes, it was, about 550 on parade, I think. It was Leinster, which was D Company, which was Kington, Leinster and Tenbury Wells. Those are my three sections. I used to have to go to each one day a week. In Tenbury Wells, we had a room above the pub going in on the left-hand side.
Not all bad news.
Not all bad news. And on the Leinster, of course, we had our own drill hall and a bar upstairs. And in Kington, we had Bodger Jones at the TA Hall Centre
there.
That's
where Bodger was it? Right.
Yeah, and they had a 2-2 range there.
Yeah.
And I could imagine to be the roughest lot of guys that you could ever have. Mm. They'd all done service.
Yeah.
One or two had done the end of the Second World War. Also, some had done the Mau Mau in Kenya.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And there I was in a Standard 8, arriving as an officer cadet and having to show them how to strip a Bren gun.
Yeah.
Well, you know, having been in the cadets and stuff, I knew how to split it, not very well. These guys could do it blindfolded.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Johnny Burton, was that what he did? He was a Bren gunner. But they were really, really patient with me.
Mm.
And I had to then that night go onto a pub crawl.
Yeah.
Starting at one end of the town and finishing up at the other.
And there were
probably
a lot more pubs there than there are now.
And we went there. And I wondered why they arrived with three darts sticking out of the top of their tunic. Anyway, we got up to the Swan on the top, and I had to walk back to my car at the drill hall and then drive back to Hereford. And I had to be in the market first thing the next morning, and they put me on the weighbridge, which meant you had to be absolutely on the nail with regard to the weights.
Yeah.
So that was Kington.
But your... I think your platoon sergeant in Leinster was Sergeant Meredith, was it?
Mick Meredith.
Yeah, who you came across later on in, didn't you?
Well, twice. I mean, Mick came, we met up to Otterburn, and in the sergeant's mess here, you will find the bunny tail.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to be on guard duty that night.
Ah, so you weren't one of them.
I wasn't one of them. I missed out on the fun, but we had our own fun, because the Percy Arms is the local pub.
Yeah.
And we suddenly had a phone call from the Percy Arms, or so it was, saying there was a riot going on. There was the Welsh and the Welsh regiment and this bunch from Herefordshire. So Mick and I went down we got down there and we poked our head round the corner. There was Johnny Burton with a pig bench whirling it around. And there was chaos. And Mick said, sir, we don't need to be here. He said the military
very
police
good move.
Would be down.
So very good move.
We went back to the guardhouse. And he said, it's only a matter of time before they're brought in. And there they were. Four of them came in, and we put them in the guardhouse that night.
But I say, I think you came across Mick a lot later on, didn't you?
Later
when you were High Sheriff, I think.
I was High Sheriff in 1617. Mick was in charge of the mayoral party in Leinster with all his robes, and I was in my gear.
Yeah.
And the sword, and we were on parade again.
Yeah.
50 years later.
50 years later. Fantastic. Yeah. So we've now got you into the TA.
Yep.
You've signed up, you've bulled your boots, you've burnt the pimples off them, you've got your smart battle dress on, you've been to camp, so you're now almost an old soldier.
Not quite, but I got my commission. It was gazetted, and then you got your first pip, which I was immensely proud of.
Mm.
And of course, I was still at D Company, and they gave me a Champ.
Oh, no, an Austin Champ Jeep, yeah.
Yep. The PSIs, when the Land Rovers came out, grabbed them all. And there was few of the Champs left, and so they left one at Leinster for me. I would go there and then up to Kington. I'd go up to Hargest and pick up three or four of the guys there, Then I go back, and I felt as if I had really made it in life.
Oh, sure. Your personal transport.
My personal transport. It was... It wasn't the easiest of vehicles to drive, and of course it was designed as a scout car.
Yeah.
And up at Otterburn, we took lessons on, you know, how to go forward and back. I mastered going forward. I mastered going back into first and second gear, but changing it from second into third was always actually quite difficult when you were doing 15 or 20 miles an hour.
Yeah.
But there we are. It's something that... you look back on with fond memories.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, by this time, we're now into the mid-60s. And with the reorganisation of the Defence Forces and the Reserve Army, unfortunately, the Herefordshire Light Infantry came to an end.
1967, I was lucky enough to be chosen to take part in the colour party. There was Frank Waugh and myself. He was Captain Frank Waugh from being a senior WO, and he represented the ranks, and I represented the officers. We trained down at Stirling Lines at the parade ground down there.
The old Stirling Lines.
The old Stirling Lines. Yeah. It took us about 2-3 months of going down there, getting it all correct. We were on parade with over 500. Through the city, 132 paces to the minute.
Yes.
Down from Harold Street we marched with the colours, and your arm had to be at 45 degrees. And I practised with a broom handle at home. Well, one, because to get it right, but you were like this for getting on for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And wrote down, we went into Hightown on parade in front of... the mayor and all the dignitaries, the high sheriff, the Lord Lieutenant, and we stood there, and then we had to go down Broad Street and in front of the cathedral.
Yeah.
I took the right-hand arch, and Frank took the left-hand, and we went down the middle of the cathedral. And halfway down, or just over halfway down, someone's... stick, walking stick, came halfway across my aisle. And I'll never forget it. It's one of those, you know, sort of dreams you get coming back periodically. I went down there, I kicked it, and it went straight up in the air, and a guy in front who was obviously looking back grabbed it and pulled it back in.
Brilliant.
You know, to this day, and if he's out there, I've never known who it is, and I would like to thank him, because I carried straight on. And then we went to the altar, we presented the colours, and then that was the end of our regiment.
And the colours, of course, we've got in the museum.
Absolutely.
They're cased up around there. And
yep.
And they're very unusual, because they were presented to the Herefordshire Regiment in 1908 on formation. And... the King, Edward VII, said that he would personally present colours to any regiment which got to, I think, 80% of strength by a certain date. And the Herefordshire Regiment did on the formation of the Territorial Force. So they were presented by Edward VII, but they were paid for by the ladies of Herefordshire, because being a TA regiment, they weren't entitled to colours at public expense. But when the Herefordshire Light Infantry was formed in 1947... in theory, they should have had new colours, but they didn't. They brought forward the colours from the Herefordshire Regiment. So to have them sort of marched into history in 1967 is really quite significant, because they really should have been new colours by that stage for the Light Infantry. So it's quite a story attached to the colours.
That's interesting. I mean, the regiment as such... although TA, we had a professional colonel, an adjutant, PSIs.
Yeah.
And I genuinely think that I would say 70% of those who were involved with it had seen service.
Yeah. And of course, lots of them were ex-National Servicemen. And at one stage, of course, they had an obligation to, after their National Service, to serve in the TA. But I think... lots of them didn't.
I'm not sure, but of course, then we had what we called the AVR 2, AVR 3.
Yeah.
I went for AVR3, and believe it or not, I was looking back at some documents. I mean, I was going every year some part of the country to a military establishment until 1988.
Mm.
So they kept us online.
Yeah, yeah.
Two or three, the other thing I remember is when we used to have the annual ball. That was the Herefordshire Regimental Ball
at
Silver Bay. I can always remember the one at Ledbury at a certain castle.
Oh, yeah, Eastnor Castle, yeah.
On the edge, and I can remember going out there the week before with the PSIs to light all the fires.
Mm. And we had to get the place warm through.
We had the fires going for a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the night of the ball, and all the ladies came in their ball gowns.
Mm.
The men were in their number ones, and they would drive in through the access there. The doors would be opened, and they'd be given a salute, and the cars would be driven away. And it was just a wonderful event.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, those days have gone now. They have. Well, for all sorts of reasons. But, yeah, I remember in my earlier service days, there would be events like that, and they were very grand and great memories, yeah.
Mm. And then we used to have the mess nights here.
Mm.
As an officer cadet, I used to have to go up to Shrewsbury to get the Führer's baton.
Oh, of course, yes, to match up with the penance, which we've got in the museum here, yeah.
Yeah, and I would go up there to KSLI, go to the guard room, and signed for it, and it came on a wooden rack.
Mm.
It was this sort of baton with jewels, and it was just tossed in the back.
Yeah.
I drove down here, and I'd put it in front of the colonel's chair at the end of the table, and my job was done, and then you did Mr. Vice.
Yeah. And I suspect there were... the other officers sometimes played you up when you were Mr. Vice, did they?
Yeah, they were very good, but the thing is that we had it at the Booth Hall once.
Oh, right.
Yeah, a dinner. And then a few weeks later, I had my 21st at the Booth Hall, in the Great Hall. And I invited most of the officers that came, and they brought a blanket with them. And then at 12 o'clock, he tossed me up 21 times.
Wow.
But there was, I don't know what, it was something it was you live through.
Mm.
I've still got my greatcoat.
Wow.
With the Hereford buttons on there. I've got my number ones and my number twos.
Yeah.
And it's a part of my life that you couldn't really rewrite.
Yeah, and it's obviously been a great impact to you as well. I mean, you've got such clear and fond memories of that time as well.
But it also got me in contact with the cadets.
Mm.
And I've acted right through from the time we were disbanded with Terry Marsh.
Yeah.
Captain Terry Marsh.
Who was the PSAO here. Who actually came as the PSAO of the Home Service Force, which was formed here in the late 80s. And then he became PSAO of C Company, the 5LI here. Yeah.
Well, he and I ran the Cadet League.
Mm.
And every year we had a raffle. We would sell tickets and be in a sergeant's mess.
Yeah.
And we made enough money to service the cadets.
Yeah.
And one must remember that in those days, the cadets, only boys, they in many cases came from what I call the poorer families.
Yes, yeah.
We had to provide money discreetly for boots. Mm. Sometimes their parents couldn't afford £10 for the annual camp, which was the only holiday they had.
Yeah.
So we maintained that up until 10 years ago when we used to rotate, by the way, chairmanship.
Between the two of you.
Yeah. Well, there was one or two that came in, and then we amalgamated with Worcester.
Yeah, of course. I mean, in the days you're talking about, it was just Herefordshire Army Cadet Force.
Herefordshire Army Cadets.
And then when the two counties came together, it became Hereford and Worcester. Yeah. And I think the Herefordshire Cadet Trust and the Worcestershire Cadet Trust joined about, as you say, about ten years ago. Yeah.
And only this week, I mean, I had the privilege to come here to the breakfast given by the Six Rifles, back into my old, sort of home, as I call it. And then in the evening, I had to go to Craswell to a meeting of the Cadet League.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. And I look around and I say, I'm by far the oldest here.
But still contributing. That's the main thing,
To me, it's one. We've got 752 cadets.
Yeah.
It is perhaps the most successful youth organisation, bar the Scouts or unequal to the Scouts. What changed it dramatically was when the girls joined.
Yeah.
Because up until then, the boys would be a bit scruffy. As soon as the girls came, of course.
Surprise, surprise.
Their boots were clean, their trousers were ironed, and look at it now, it's about nearly 50-50.
Yeah, and it's a great organisation. I know that from my experience of the cadets, that lots of the cadets come in age sort of 12, 13, and they're sort of a bit sort of weak and uncertain about what's going on. They've got hormones just about to bounce around everywhere. And they've got, as you say, quite a few of them still come from broken backgrounds. And then they don't get the discipline at school that they used to have. And they're looking for something to give them some structure. 3 years later, they march out as young men and women who have really blossomed. And the cadets have given them that. Great organisation.
But, Jem, just look at the Lord Lieutenant's cadets.
Oh, tremendous.
I mean, you know, that's the pinnacle of being a cadet. If you're picked to be a Lord Lieutenant's cadet. And having been a Lord Lieutenant, a High Sheriff, and see them start nervous.
Yeah.
Not sure which door to open for the royalty. Not sure whether they should salute or whether they should just stand there. And then wander around the cathedral, not showing what they should do, when and how. And then by the end, when they give their last address to the ones coming in, you see a totally different person.
There's a great story about the Lord Lieutenant's cadet when the Queen visited in, was it 2012, I think she visited? And she came into the railway station, and the Lord Lieutenant's cadet, one of them was there, female. And they greeted the Queen and held the doors open. And then they were supposed to go down to the Bishop's Meadow. And for whatever reason, this girl missed the transport, or the transport went without her. So she was sort of going to be stuck at the station. So she had the confidence to wave down the Queen's security guard in their car and get a lift with them to the Bishop's Meadow. And that's it. She got that confidence through mainly being a cadet and a Lord Lieutenant's cadet, but tremendous.
And I keep on saying to them, you just put that on your CV.
Yeah. Again, there was one of the Lord Lieutenant's cadets that went to a university interview, and they sort of chatting and said, what have you done? Have you done anything? And she said, well, I held the door open for the Queen. Mean you held the door and explained that she was the Lord of the Cadets. And apparently her whole interview revolved around being a Lord Lieutenant's cadet. And she got into the university, but they never asked her anything about her academic qualifications at all, which is tremendous. But yeah, of course, you've had a long association with the museum as well, haven't you, Bill?
Yes, I mean, I can remember as an officer cadet being sent down to the town hall where a lot of the silver was kept and having to help clean the silver.
Yeah.
And then we bring it here. And I can always, the carriage that you
brought on. Oh, yeah, the decanters,
The decanters. Yeah. And we had in those days all the cutlery and the plates and the cups and the mats. I've got one of the old mats over there. It was a tradition. It was, the table just looked out of this world.
Well, I mean, we as you know, we still have the Herefordshire Light Infantry Officers Dinner Club, which meets annually. Not quite so grand as it used to be, but we still get the silver out and we polish it, and it looks quite good. But, of course, you were chairman of the trustees of the museum for quite a few years as well, weren't you?
20-odd years. Yeah. Well, I mean, in those days, Colonel Tom Hill did an awful lot. And he's written the book, of course.
Yes.
And he devoted, when he retired, because he lived at Found Hope.
Yeah.
I sold his house for him. He left it in better order than it had ever been before.
Yeah.
And then we had a sort of a period of time. Then, of course, you came. And because your local connection at Ledbury, your father was in the Herefordshire Light Infantry, we had momentum.
Yeah.
And We were very lucky because we were at one time trying to get the regiment, that's the SAS, to do a joint museum with us, which they declined. Then we were going to go into the shell store and move it down there.
Yeah.
We were then going to build it out here where the helicopter pad is. And all those fell through for one reason or another, which was a blessing.
I think ultimately it has been, because we've now got the museum here in this room. We've got the security in more than one way. We've got the security of tenure, and we've got the security provided by the barracks. So we're very fortunate to be here, I think.
I mean, look how many museums of county regiments which have disbanded have now just either been amalgamated or gone. And here we've got this museum that's sort of locked away, secure, available.
And we're co-located with the reserves here, and the reserves come in and they can see their heritage. And you know, they can see photographs of Bill Jackson in 1966. You know, as a one pit wonder. but the history is here as well, and of course the museum, what you've been talking about, the reserves, the cadet, it's all part of the county military fabric, which is a very strong and deep fabric within the county.
Well, I mean, of course, we've got perhaps the highest ratio of ex-service people. We certainly did. I can remember I had someone working for me as a stonemason, and I used to pick him up every morning at 7 to go to Wall End Farm where we were doing the work. And one day I needed to go into Hereford, and so I took him with me. And this is around about 20, 25 years ago. He went into Hereford and he said, "Oh, I'm not feeling very well." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, the last time I was in Hereford is when I came back from the war."
Yeah.
I then took him to my parents and had a cup of tea and got him back. And he said that it just brought back memories.
Yeah.
He served through the war. He'd got off the troop train at Hereford, came back to Lampster, lived in Bargates. And that was his first time he'd ever been to Hereford since.
Well, goodness me. But it's interesting how sort of experiences can be pleasant or unpleasant. And often those unpleasant ones, people just want to forget and shut them out. And sometimes things creep up on them and reopen them. And of course, this is one of the big problems which the soldiers have got at the moment with PTSD and whatever, as a result of Afghanistan and Iraq and some of the horrific things which went on over there.
Well, I've just come from the cart shed. I'm one of the trustees. Yeah. And we started 13 years ago using nature to help people with difficulties. And it was the post-traumatic stress disorder that were our first clientele or participants, we call them. And now we cover all aspects of the blue light service and now the young cart shed. But it's recognised now.
It is, and of course it wasn't recognised. And certainly if you go back to, you know, if we look around here, the First World War and whatever, the guys come back and we just had to get on with it. You know, there wasn't the state support. And of course, in that environment, that's where things like the Royal British Legion were formed, and the old comrades associations had their strength. And they've passed down through the years. And each generation has had its own challenges and, you know, have been met to varying degrees.
I mean, people say, why do you wear the tie? Well, I just say, well, there was 10 left and they had to be sold.
Bill is wearing the tie of the Herefordshire Regiment and the Herefordshire Light Infantry, which is black, red and green. So if you ever see Bill wearing this tie, you will now know what it is.
And the reason is, actually, it's in memory of my grandfather. He signed up for the Herefords with his friends, but was transferred immediately to the medical corps. And he spent the whole war on the Western Front with a horse and cart, because we were butchers and he knew how to harness and look after a horse and cart. And he went up and down with the Red Cross on it.
Gosh.
And he turned round and picked up all the wounded, both German and English, and left the German dead and picked up the English dead. The Germans would come out at night and pick up their dead. And he survived the whole war because it was gentlemen's agreement that the Red Cross
Wouldn't be shot
medics
fired on.
Wouldn't be fired on.
Gosh.
But he never was never the same man, and no one in the family ever talked about it. And it was only until recently that I got a story from Uncle Peter, and he said that, yeah, he drank himself to death by the time he was in his early 30s.
Which, of course, was that the result of those experiences.
Absolutely.
Anyway, Bill, it's been fascinating talking to you, and I hope you've enjoyed reliving some of your, well, hopefully the pleasant ones. I don't think you've given us any of the horror stories, but thank you very much for joining us and sharing your experiences with us in the Regimental Museum.
Andy, it's a pleasure always to be here, and I look around now and also like to say to you and the team, you've done a fantastic job, and it's here for the city and available. So if anyone wants to see the museum in Hereford, then all they have to do, get through to me and I'll get through to Andy.
Yeah, or look on the website, and all the details are on the website. Okay, thank you very much, Bill.
Thank you.